So is this working now? Yes. I have to use all this stuff because we do recordings of these lectures. And that's why I will also have to stick to the time schedule here, as the recording is timed. Welcome all to this course in scientific methodology. It's a pretty core or basic course in how to think science, which for some of you may be only repetitions. For some of you, this is completely new. But it is to bring you up to at least a certain, not merely basic, but a certain level when it comes to your understanding of vocabulary and terminology and the way to do science. Okay, first myself, I am Frode Volden. I am the study leader of the master's in interaction design. So I see some of my students here. But you come from different classes. There is a whole bunch of you from information security, right? Can you raise your hands just to give me an impression of who comes from what study? That's information security. Okay. Good. That's nearly half the class, I think. Interaction design, which is also a good group, and applied computer science is also here, right? So I think you're dividing this class in three somewhat equal parts. Are there other classes or other master programs here? No. Tends to vary a little bit who comes here. Yeah, I told you my name and my role, but I also have a background. I am actually a psychologist, which I guess will come through when I give examples, when I try to tell you or give examples that has to do with the teaching here. But still, we're using the same language over many disciplines when it comes to science, and a lot of these books that we use are used on very different types of classes. So the language of science is somewhat a common academic language that we have. But bear over with some of the examples, but the terminology and the stuff I want to learn you, the statistics, that stuff is something we have in common. You can see that I use a somewhat crippled way to... that reminds me, I should start probably a recording here, just to, because that was one of my points here. We have several ways to support these lectures for distance students, part-time students. I know that the somewhat awkward time slot we have gotten here early in the morning on a Wednesday is difficult for some. It's hard for me as well. I know that a lot of you will probably follow this on distance. When you look at the class here, there's probably around 50 of you. There is the total number of students who are following this is about the double of this. So this is a common course for all the master students we have. But that means I'm also using some tools here to support this. So we have this Blackboard page, of course, which is common for all the lectures or all the different courses you have this year. But in addition to the Blackboard page, I also try to do recordings in different ways. This auditorium has capabilities of recording both the screen and me and my voice. It won't record you. It's the cameras in the back there. So don't be afraid if you feel the urge to talk. If I ask some questions, you won't be recorded. Probably. So I'm not sure how they have developed this, but maybe there are some new microphones available. I'm not sure, but usually not. And in addition, I try to do a recording here on Blackboard, or a tool in Blackboard called Blackboard Collaborate. So that's why this presentation is somewhat crippled, because I do the presentation through this Blackboard tool. So just feel free, if you have Blackboard, if you have laptops, for instance, you can log on to our page and go to the tools there and find Blackboard Collaborate. You should be able to find it somewhere. And you can just log on there and follow this lecture or follow the presentation on your desks if you wish. I don't mind. So we try to support this, but it's not a distance course in that sense. It's we just try to support it as good as we can. It won't be perfect. I will do mistakes, for instance, like the one I did in the beginning here, where I didn't start the recording, which is kind of a typical thing to do here, as I have no assistant to do this. And there are, of course, technical difficulties now and then, but we'll do our best. So yes, there will be a number of lectures. Not all are scheduled yet. I've been somewhat reluctant to put all the lectures on the schedule yet. I'll do it anyway now with this time slot. But I'm working to try to change the time slot to a later time for the day. It's not as easy as I thought, because many of you come from different programs, and some of these programs have whole day classes, seminars, which somewhat locks the ability to, or the flexibility to, reschedule things. But we'll see. There will probably be openings for changes in a couple of weeks' time, but I'm not sure of that. For some of you this may be perfect, but I know that I've got a lot of requests to change it, so we will probably do that if it is possible, and if some of you can't follow the new time slot, well then you will be supported in different ways. But yes, there will be lectures like this one. This is a more like a traditional class, as you are a lot of students here. In addition to this, you will find on that's available already on the Blackboard page some what we could call learning objects, just small video clips where I present, talk about some core topics. But it's only like 5-10 minutes things. But it can be reminders that you can use when we talk about some of the terms here. Through the course, you will be writing two small essays, call them short essays. It's only very short reports. One is coming up quite early in 2 weeks' time. I will present it next week. You're going to do an analysis of two short papers and identify key concepts, define them, discuss them a little bit. We'll get back to that next week. You'll get a pretty precise one there. You can actually find the two papers on the Blackboard page already, I think. I think I uploaded them. But with no descriptions of what you're going to do. One is a funny paper, a funny science thing from the Journal of Improbable Research, called Kansas is Flatter Than a Pancake. The other one is a paper that I've written with some colleagues on the use of laptops during classes. So that's one one of your assignments. There will be a second assignment on plagiarism, on ethics when it comes to that, after a presentation from the library. That will also be a short hand-in for you. That comes a bit later than in a month's time. So it's pretty condensed now, period, this lecture part. Also with the two hand-ins. In addition to this, you're going to do a small science project in groups. So you're going to be self-assigned to groups consisting of, I say, 4 to 6 people, where you're going to actually do a little science project. It can be a serious one. It can be something that that has to do with your studies. But it can also be something completely absurd if you want to do that, or funny, or whatever. Does the bread always come with the wet side down, or something like that? Or does a cat always fall on his legs? A bit ethical, challenging, but you can do this type of projects. But that's more or less up to you. The point is that you should write a project sketch. So we should you should find a problem to investigate, and you should perform some kind of a data collection based on the problem or the question that you ask, and we will together do what we call hypothesis testing based on this. So we will do some statistics. By the way, you will have access to some statistical tools through NTNU, and I will use the program which some of you may be familiar with, which is called SPSS, Statistical Package for the Social Sciences was the original name, I think. But it's pretty widely used over many disciplines, especially for studies that has to do with people, but it's also used for more technical analysis. But it's very strong when it comes to statistics that involve people. And this project then is something that you will write down in a presentation group wise and present to me. There is, for those of you who are distance students who can't participate in groups here, there will be an alternative project where you are gathering data on a different topic on a questionnaire. But in addition to that, well, you're going to give me data and I'll do some data analysis with you. But in addition to that, you will also write a short essay on that one. So for those of you who are distance students and don't participate in a group project, there will be a third assignment for you, a short paper. But work-wise, it's absolutely not more. So it's comparable. I will make, this is not a, the exam is a pretty traditional exam here. It's a large class, I can come up with something more creative. It could probably be some multiple choice thing, but that also has its weakness, especially on topics like this, I think. So it's a traditional exam that you're going to do here. Although I think electronically handed in this year. I'm not sure how this will be handled. We're using a new system for this. But the traditional exam coming up, I haven't got the date yet. Yeah, I will publish it as soon as I can, as I know it. But the exam will probably be quite early in the exam period. It will be quite early in December. So expect a date there. For our exam, we're going to analyze some statistical output or read some statistical output. You're not going to do any statistics. And you get a number of questions where you can, I think, if I follow somewhat the same structure as I've done before, and I probably will, I'm not that creative. So you'll probably get 6 questions, and we're going to answer 5 of them, something like that. So I will announce this date, but in addition to this, of course, you will get example questions. I will make these things available on the Blackboard page for you. Okay, is that all the practical info? Is that okay? You're not wondering about something? You feel free to ask. So why do we do this? Let's say it's part of following a master's class where you are expected to create some new knowledge yourself through the master thesis. So compared to what some of you have done quite recently, I guess, or some of you are more grown-ups, but in a bachelor's level, you're more or less expected to just reproduce something. Right? You're not supposed to create some new content, some new knowledge, some new tools or whatever. But in this connection, you are. And in order to do this, you need to both apply scientific methods to be able to say something about the stuff you want to say something about, but also to be a what you could call a critical consumer of information. Because you will be reading scientific papers and reading them with the terminology in mind, where you know what the words means, or to be able to analyze things in a critical way helps you a lot. It makes you more efficient, and it will probably allow you to be a better thinker and a critical thinker when it comes to knowledge. Because a lot of the stuff we are dealing with is, I could say, handling uncertainties rather than finding the answers. So when you read science, there are usually attempts to answer questions. But more than that, it's expressing all the uncertainties that's involved when you try to answer questions. And that's part of the scientific process. And of course, the last one here, to want you to be honest and to avoid the very quick answers, which may be erroneous. They may be correct, of course, our intuitive answers or our way to go directly to this. But let's say it's a way for us to try to reduce your errors or your error rate when it comes to how certain you are of your answers. So some of you may, as I tried to say early on here, some of you may be here already. Some of you may have had classes like this. Some of you may have had parts of it. Some of you may have had statistics, for instance, which is part of this course. It's not a big part. We're talking more, could differentiate a little bit about between, let's say, statistics and methodologies. Our focus, or my focus in these lectures, are more on methodologies than on statistics. Statistics is a tool we use, but we have to apply certain methodologies on top of the statistics. So it's not a course in statistics, although I will mention a lot of statistical terms, especially when we do hypothesis testing. But it's not a math class, and I'm not competent at giving that in any sense either. So some of you may have more competence on some of this stuff than I have. And some of you may have had classes in social sciences. Are there any who have had that? One at least? Few? For you, some of this may be repetitions, but repetitions may be a good thing as well. So, and you may have an easier path towards the exam than others. And that's fine. But let's say this is to bring you up to a somewhat basic level. As I already mentioned, we try to point this towards the master thesis, and this is also a way to try to encourage you to think towards the master thesis at an early stage. By the way, the lectures, some of you take pictures of the PowerPoint files I use here. They are available on the Blackboard page as well. So this is available. I try to do that at least right before the lecture. You can't expect them to be there very early, but they should be available before the lectures. And these are. So a satisfactory master thesis should demonstrate a student's ability to perform individual research, of course, under the guidance of an advisor or a mentor. So, but the key part here is to perform individual research. And that is what you're expected to do. You're not all of you are going to do, you could say, research science, but you're going to do some kind of, let's say, analysis of your surroundings. This is the stuff that you do. Even if you program something and do a, let's say, make a new algorithm or try out a new algorithm for something, you will discuss whether this is a better one than the previous ones, and you will apply scientific methods or scientific thinking when you try to analyze why, or is it better, or why is it better? How does it differ from the existing methods, for instance? So even though you're not doing this quantitative, even though you're not doing experiments, you will probably be doing some level of science, and you will at least be doing a lot of scientific reading. So this course is to help you to start this. Of course, we don't expect you to do world-class science. None of you will come out, probably. It would surprise me with a Nobel Prize after a master thesis. But you're expected to apply sound scientific principles to what you do. You're expected to develop, you could say, scientific competence that you take bring with you after the master's thesis as well, out in the real world. So you're supposed to bring this with you when you have done a master's program. And of course, part of this is also, and this will be a lecture later on, you will also get into this now and then, when it comes to other topics as well, and your projects. And that is that you reflect on ethical, legal, at least ethical and legal aspects, especially ethical aspects of gathering data, doing analysis, doing science. Ethics is important here. Yes. So what do we mean by doing research? What is it? Well, at least one core concept when it comes to science is that it has to do with answering a question in some sense. Or at least wondering about something, even though the questions are not always that specific and well written. But it is a structured process where you wonder and you try to wonder about something as specific as possible. That's the point. You have to cut down problems to something that is possible to answer. And then the next step is the process of, you could say, applying good methods to actually answer the questions or the problems that we are dealing with. So that's the method part. You have a problem description. In between there you have a hypothesis. When you are specific enough, then you have a method part where you apply good ways to actually find the answer to the question or analyze the question. Of course, then there is a do part. You have to do this, and you have to analyze data in the right way. So there are several steps here, but always based on knowledge and theory. Very little of this is taken from nothing or from your own creative mind or whatever. One point is that doing research should be something in addition to just gather or so the last one, just to read science and apply it on a new area is usually not very scientific if it's obvious that it will work. But if you have doubts that it will work, it could be good science. But then you have to describe your doubts, and that will then be the problem that you are investigating. Will it actually work in another field? But just doing one thing that works in one area and just transport it to something else, making a program that works one place and try it in another context which is quite similar, is usually not considered a scientific approach. Neither is your own, you could say, race of competence to be able to do the research. That's not good science either. So good science should try to add elements to knowledge. It should try to do something more. So it's not just reading science, it's not just learning the skills you need to have to be able to perform a craft or the work that you're going to do in the end. It's something more. It's your ability to actually analyze and apply sound methodologies. So let's skip this one. I spent a lot of time in the beginning here. So why is this of any importance at all? Can it be this difficult? It's obvious, right? We can just gather data and see the answers. Well, the problem is that it tends not to be this obvious. Because we do errors. We a lot of science is bad science. A lot of science say they're applying a scientific approach without actually doing it. I'm referring here to, if you go to this YouTube video that's comes in the end there, it's a very old recording of a philosopher called Karl Popper, where he reflects on science over pseudoscience. So just he makes a big point of trying to falsify your beliefs rather than confirming your beliefs, and that's a key issue he have here, which he makes a point of makes the scientific method, the sound scientific method, superior over what he calls pseudoscience. Pseudoscience is let's say could be the typical way of just, well, the clinician who says that, well, of course my method is correct because I have clients who become much better when I apply my method. That's this very introvert examples that we tend to use, that tend to be used as explanations of things. Karl Popper called this pseudoscience and say that it has very little value because it's very biased. What we should try to do is to establish that one belief actually is better than another belief, that it's a highly superior to another belief. And by doing this in a structured way to describe how you have established the superiority of one belief over another, if you do this in a structured way, it's also possible for others to judge your conclusions. So they can read how you have come to your conclusions. And this is the core of the scientific method. It makes it possible for others to look into what you are doing. And one of the problems is that one of the reasons that we have to do things in a way, in this way, is that the human mind is in no way a computer. It's not very rational. We have a lot of shortcomings. We misinterpret information. We select information. Usually that supports our hypothesis. We are quite intuitive and emotional when we do when we make conclusions. And we're extremely poor users of statistics. So some of you may have read this book. It's a book by Daniel Kahneman, a psychologist, got the Nobel Prize in economics some, I think, 8-10 years ago with an Israeli guy. The Israeli guy died before the Nobel Prize was given to Daniel Kahneman, Tversky. And the two of them have demonstrated a lot of the shortcomings, not shortcomings, but the, let's say, the methods that humans use in their decision-making process. When we try to make sense out of the world, how do we do it? It's not shortcomings, it's adaptions, it's rationality, it's the way we want to do things. But I encourage you to, there is a short YouTube video where he's in, I think the YouTube video that I refer to there, I won't show it to you now, is a YouTube video where Daniel Kahneman is interviewed. But Kahneman and Tversky. Let's try this one. The book was called Thinking Fast and Thinking Slow, by the way. I'll try to explain what it means after this one. So this is a quite obvious, or this seems like an easy problem, right? The one you see here up here now. A bat and a ball together costs $1.10. The bat costs $1 more than the ball, and how much does the ball cost? Some intuitive answers here? Huh? Yeah, some of you know this, but your intuitive answer, what would that be? Yeah, of course, what you tend to say is 10. Most people do. Well, some don't. Okay, fine. Then you are, or if I could say, it's, that you are slow thinkers. I'm going back to this. Because our intuitive way of doing this would, of course, be to say 10 cents. But the right answer is that the bat costs $1.05 and the ball costs 5 cents. But a lot of us need a lot of recalculations of the problem to get to that answer. So I think 95 out of 100 or something will intuitively try the, if you're not a little paranoid, it will go directly to the $1 or $1.10 answer, which is the wrong one. But it's just an example of a strategy that people use when we get to conclusions. And Kahneman and Tversky, they refer to this as system one and system two thinking, where system one thinking is this fast, intuition-based, heuristics-based, rules of the thumb, heuristics, and also an intuitive way of unconscious, more or less, way of getting to answers. When it comes to dealing with risks and analysis of risks in the society, for instance, we are highly biased towards system one thinking. And of course, it's rational. It's extremely fast for us to do this. It's the intuitive answers we do when we try to analyze the world. We don't have to think about things. We just act. And a lot of this intuitive acting leads to erroneous conclusions. What we would like in some contexts, at least when it comes to science, is to force you into what we could call system two thinking, which again is the more slow, systematic, controlled way of getting answers. Most of you would get to the 5-cent answer, the correct 5-cent answer, in the previous example, if you were given time and if you were told that you should use time to analyze the question. Right? So, we can be good at this, but we are not always very good. I'll just introduce another task to you before we go into the break, which you can think a little bit about during the break, even discuss if you wish. So you're given ample time to the answer here. It's a pretty famous psychological task or problem-solving task, which is something we do now and then, that it can be used to analyze our ways of getting to conclusions. It's we're getting a statement, or you're seeing four cards here, and your task is to determine if the rule that's stated or the statement that's written here is true or false. And the statement that you are going to try to investigate is if a card has a vocal on one side, it has an even number on the other side. That's the simple statement that's here. So which cards do you need to turn over in order to determine if this rule is true or false? And think about this in a break, and we'll meet at 9:15 again.